The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 22. Tabooed Words. Section 4. Names of Kings and Other Sacred Persons Tabooed. When we see that in primitive society the names of mere commoners, whether alive or dead, are matters of such anxious care, we need not be surprised that great precautions should be taken to guard from harm the names of sacred kings and priests. Thus the name of the king of Daomi is always kept secret, lest the knowledge of it should enable some evil-minded person to do him a mischief. The appellations by which the different kings of Daomi have been known to Europeans are not their true names, but mere titles, or what the natives call strong names. The natives seem to think that no harm comes of such titles being known, since they are not, like the birth names, vitally connected with their owners. In the Gala kingdom of Kara, the birth name of the sovereign may not be pronounced by a subject under pain of death, and common words which resemble it in sound are changed for others. Among the Bahama of Central Africa, when the king dies, his name is abolished from the language, and if his name was that of an animal, a new appellation must be found for the creature at once. For example, the king is often called a lion. Hence at the death of a king named Lion, a new name for lions in general has to be coined. In Siam it used to be difficult to ascertain the king's real name, since it was carefully kept secret from fear of sorcery. Anyone who mentioned it was clapped into jail. The king might only be referred to under certain high-sounding titles, such as the August, the Perfect, the Supreme, the Great Emperor, Descendant of the Angels, and so on. In Burma it was accounted an impiety of the deepest to die to mention the name of the reigning sovereign. Burmese subjects, even when they were far from their country, could not be prevailed upon to do so. After his accession to the throne, the king was known by his royal titles only. Among the Zulus, no man will mention the name of the chief of his tribe or the names of the progenitors of the chief, so far as he can remember them. Nor will he utter common words which coincide with or merely resemble in sound tabooed names. In the tribe of the Dwans there was a chief called Langa, which means the sun. Hence the name of the sun was changed from Langa to Gala, and so remains to this day, though Langa died more than 100 years ago. Again, in the Znomeo tribe the word meaning, to herd cattle, was changed from Alasa or Ayasatakajasa, because U-Maiasi was the name of the chief. Besides these taboos, which were observed by each tribe separately, all the Zulu tribes united in tabooing the name of the king who reigned over the whole nation. Hence, for example, when Panda was king of Zululand, the word for a root of a tree, which is Impando, was changed to Nxabo. Again, the word for lies or slander was altered from Amasbo to Amagrida, because Amasbo contains a syllable of the name of the famous king Sechweo. These substitutions are not, however, carried so far by the men as by the women, who omit every sound even remotely resembling one that occurs in a tabooed name. At the king's kraal, indeed, it is sometimes difficult to understand the speech of the royal wives, as they treat in this fashion the names not only of the king and his forefathers, but even of his and their brothers back for generations. When to these tribal and national taboos we add those family taboos on the names of connexions by marriage which have been already described, we can easily understand how it comes about that in Zululand every tribe has words peculiar to itself, and that the women have a considerable vocabulary of their own. Members, too, of one family may be debarred from using words employed by those of another. The women of one kraal, for instance, may call a hyena by its ordinary name. Those of the next may use the common substitute. While in a third the substitute may also be unlawful and another term may have to be invented to supply its place. Hence the Zulu language at the present day almost presents the appearance of being a double one. Indeed, for multitudes of things it possesses three or four synonyms, which through the blending of tribes are known all over Zululand. In Madagascar, a similar custom everywhere prevails and has resulted, as among the Zulus, in producing certain dialectic differences in the speech of the various tribes. There are no family names in Madagascar, and almost every personal name is drawn from the language of daily life and signifies some common object or action or quality, such as a bird, a beast, a tree, a plant, a color, and so on. Now, whenever one of these common words forms the name or part of the name of the chief of the tribe, it becomes sacred and may no longer be used in its ordinary signification as the name of a tree, an insect, or whatnot. Hence a new name for the object must be invented to replace the one which has been discarded. It is easy to conceive what confusion and uncertainty may thus be introduced into a language when it is spoken by many little local tribes, each ruled by a petty chief with his own sacred name. Yet there are tribes and people who submit to this tyranny of words as their fathers did before them from time immemorial. The inconvenient results of the custom are especially marked on the western coast of the island, where, on account of the large number of independent chieftains, the names of things, places, and rivers have suffered so many changes that confusion often arises, for when once common words have been banned by the chiefs, the natives will not acknowledge to have ever known them in their old sense. But it is not merely the names of living kings and chiefs which are tabooed in Madagascar. The names of dead sovereigns are equally under a ban, at least in some parts of the island. Thus among the Sakalavis, when a king has died, the nobles and people meet in council round the dead body and solemnly choose a new name by which the deceased monarch shall be henceforth known. After the new name has been adopted, the old name by which the king was known during his life becomes sacred and may not be pronounced under pain of death. Further, words in the common language which bear any resemblance to the forbidden name also become sacred and have to be replaced by others. Persons who uttered these forbidden words were looked on not only as grossly rude, but even as felons. They had committed a capital crime. However, these changes of vocabulary are confined to the district over which the deceased king reigned. In the neighboring districts, the old words continue to be employed in the old sense. The sanctity attributed to the persons of chiefs in Polynesia naturally extended also to their names, which on the primitive view are hardly separable from the personality of their owners. Hence in Polynesia we find the same systematic prohibition to utter the names of chiefs or of common words resembling them which we have already met with in Zululand and Madagascar. Thus in New Zealand the name of a chief is held so sacred that, when it happens to be a common word, it may not be used in the language, and another has to be found to replace it. For example, a chief of the southward of East Cape bore the name of Maripi, which signified a knife, hence a new word, Necra, for knife was introduced, and the old one became obsolete. Elsewhere the word for water, Way, had to be changed, because it chanced to be the name of the chief, and would have been desecrated by being applied to the vulgar fluid as well as to his sacred person. This taboo naturally produced a plentiful crop of synonyms in the Maori language, and travelers newly arrived in the country were sometimes puzzled at finding the same things called by quite different names in neighboring tribes. When a king comes to the throne in Tahiti, any words in the language that resemble his name in sound must be changed for others. In former times, if any man were so rash as to disregard this custom and to use the forbidden words, not only he but all his relations were immediately put to death. But the changes thus introduced were only temporary. On the death of the king, the new words fell into disuse, and the original ones were revived. In ancient Greece, the names of the priests and other high officials who had to do with the performance of the Eleusinian mysteries might not be uttered in their lifetime. To pronounce them was a legal offence. The pedant in Lucian tells how he fell in with these august personages howling long to the police court a ribald fellow who had dared to name them, though well he knew that ever since their consecration it was unlawful to do so, because they had become anonymous, having lost their old names and acquired new and sacred titles. From two inscriptions found at Eleusis it appears that the names of the priests were committed to the depths of the sea. Probably they were engraved on tablets of bronze or lead, which were then thrown into deep water in the Gulf of Salamis. The intention doubtless was to keep the names a profound secret. And how could that be done more surely than by sinking them in the sea? What human vision could spy them glimmering far down in the dim depths of the green water? A clearer illustration of the confusion between the incorporeal and the corporeal, between the name and its material embodiment, could hardly be found than in this practice of civilized Greece.